Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to Murder Mile. Today I'm standing on Glasshouse Street, W1, two streets west of the senseless stabbing of the unfortunate Mr. Johnson, 300 feet northwest of the tube stop where the cowardly killer of Camille Gordon fled, one street east of where the blackout ripper picked up several sex workers, and one road south of the possible suicide by the sportsman's mistress. Coming soon to Murder Mile. Just off Piccadilly Circus, at 32 Glasshouse Street, once stood the Regent Palace Hotel. Opened in 1915 and ran by J. Lyons & Co., owners of the Corner House Tea Rooms. Being 9 stories high, across half a square block and with over 1,000 bedrooms, the Regent Palace was the largest hotel in Europe. Since its post-war decline, it became little more than a brothel, so bawdy that Canadian servicemen referred to it as the Riding School, a youth hostel for overseas students / shoplifters. And now, its grand entrance is a showroom for UGG. Those hideous fleece-lined boots, which supposedly make the wearer look as devastatingly sexy as cavewoman Raquel Welch in the film 1 Million Years BC, but actually make them look like they've mistimed a kick of a sheep's jacksie. And being so toasty warm, they make the wearer's tootsies stink like a Neanderthal's butt crack. On Saturday the 29th of October 1932, at a little after 9:30 p.m., Mr. and Mrs. Turner of Bradford booked into room 201 on the second floor of the Regent's Palace Hotel. Not being locals, they looked as if they were here to see the vibrant sights of the big city. Kissing and holding hands, it was clear that this young couple were very much in love. And although their small suitcase reiterated to the receptionist that they would be staying only a few nights, their plan was never to leave their room, at least not alive. The suicide pact of Mabel Hill and Herbert Turner was a tragedy reported by talentless hacks, whose bile has been regurgitated verbatim as if every detail was fact. But having only scratched the surface of this truly sorry story, what every writer missed was the truth about these lovers and their last fateful act. My name is Michael, I am your tour guide, and this is Murder Mile. Episode 165, To Love, To Die, Together. Love is a powerful emotion, being stronger than anger and more vindictive than hate. It can turn the rational irrational in the blind pursuit of good, of bad, of joy and of pain. Even though our primary instinct is our own preservation, mistakenly believing, as if by fate, that we have found our one true love. That love can lead to our own destruction. Mabel and Herbert were two such lovers. But denied their togetherness in life, they would seek it in death. Mabel Hill was born Mabel Bentley on the 9th of December 1899 in Chipley, West Yorkshire. Raised in a two-story sandstone terrace at 2 Alexandra Road, it was the kind of place where kids played tig in the streets. The wives scrubbed the stoops till the black slate shined, and the menfolk slunk back from the pit, all soot-sodden, calloused, and hacking up coal dust, in a life without any dreams or joy. Just the endless drudgery of an everyday existence, with the majority married, as that was what was expected. As the eldest of six to her widowed mother Clara, fate would be intensely cruel to the Bentleys, as with the family being bereft of a father, before too long, death would come for two of the children. With life being a struggle, the last of the family lived upstairs, as the downstairs was converted into a small confectionery shop, selling boiled sweets, wine gums, and licorice. A few doors down, at number 24, lived Herbert, the second eldest son of four boys to Charles and Augusta. And although our lovers-to-be were raised just 50 yards apart, with Mabel being 11 years his senior, she only knew him as the Turner kid, and their only early interactions was possibly as she ruffled his hair to gift him a halfpenny sweet. In later life, many would describe Mabel as matronly, as although a little dour, yet sturdily built. Being a formidable brunette, she had a steely strong will to do what she felt was right. They may have seemed like an odd couple, one short, one tall, one little, one big, but they made sense, as with Herbert being an eternal boy, she became the voice to his silence and the decision maker as he dithered over what was best for others. Stammering a passive, yes dear, or a no dear, as she wiped away a tiny speck of dirt off his cheek with a hanky and a lick of spit. But as an unlikely couple, there were two opposites who perfectly complemented each other's strengths and weaknesses. Always being happy, upbeat, and never without a whistled ditty on his lips, Herbert brought hope and joy to her life, where Mabel saw only darkness and woe. It's unclear how much Herbert knew of her past, as having struggled with anxiety and depression, so severely that her arrhythmic palpitations of her stuttering heart often caused her to collapse. She had once tried to take her own life by slitting her own throat. Mabel and Herbert's curse was that they both wanted to be loved. For him, he treasured its simple pleasures, hugging, kissing, holding hands, and making the other as happy, if not happier, than him. But for Mabel, being ever the romantic, she had always dreamed of the perfect marriage to the perfect man. But as we know, dreams are rarely attainable. And as the shame of spinsterhood loomed ever larger, as this 25-year-old singleton was left on the shelf, fearing a life of loveless solitude, she did as many women do, and she settled for second best. On the 24th of May 1924, in Bradford Registry Office, Mabel Bentley married 30-year-old Herbert Victor Hill, and the two moved in together at nearby 7 Daleside Road. As romances go, it was fine, perfunctory, and pleasant. But lacking any spark, whether love or friction, although they would remain good friends, they drifted apart. And following a mutual agreement, in 1931, after 7 years of marriage, they separated. The breakdown of her marriage felt like a failure. And although, when she had married, Herbert Turner was nothing but a scrawny little schoolboy, having returned to her childhood home, the boy had become a man, and as the two locked eyes in church, a new love had begun to blossom. It was a love which would lead to exquisite happiness, but also their deaths. With Mabel still legally married, although an amicable divorce looked likely, living barely a few doors apart, they had to keep their love affair a secret from the local sticky beaks and wagging tongues. In their own words, they became sweethearts. Two lovers who nipped off for sneaky walks, slipped each other love letters, and snuck down alleys for a quick peck on the cheek when no one was looking. It may seem tame by today's standards, but in a small town, a little scandal can have big repercussions. No one knew about Mabel and Herbert, not their friends, their families, nor her ex-husband-to-be. By the start of October 1932, having barely been together for 6 months, they believed that they had found their one true love. This was it. Their search was over. And being so besotted with each other that they could see nothing but a life of eternal bliss, their talk turned to their future together, forever. But it was not to be. On Tuesday, the 18th of October, 1932, less than 2 weeks before their fateful decision, Mabel met her husband Herbert, as they often did, still being friends. Over a cup of tea, he mooted the thought that maybe they should get back together. As in his eyes, the marriage wasn't dead, but in hers, it was. According to the law, the sanctity of marriage was paramount above everything else, including her happiness and wishes. And as the separation was mutual, with no accounts of infidelity, cruelty, nor violence, she could not divorce him. So blinded by love, Mabel and Herbert saw only one way out of their troubles. As being denied love in life, they would find it together in death. On Saturday, the 15th of October, 1932, Herbert was fixing a car at Sherborne Garages on Town Lane in the village of Idle, where he worked as a motor mechanic for W&W Heggs. Walter Heggs, the proprietor, liked Herbert. He was quiet, a little frail, and easily led, but a good lad who always worked hard. Mid-afternoon, Herbert piped up.
Mr. Eggs?
Yes, lad?
If I needed to destroy some puppies, would strychnine do?
Which may seem an odd thing to say, but back then, it was perfectly fine.
No, lad. The best thing you can do is drown them.
And with that, Herbert thanked his boss and carried on with his job. But the demise of these doggies weighed heavy on his mind. at a little before 5 p.m., George Leslie Todd, a local chemist, parked his car at the Sherborne garage, as per usual. Asked the same question, Mr. Todd replied,
"No, son, you'll want some prussic acid."
And with its purchase being legal for everyday means, Mr. Todd reassured him,
"Pop into me shop tomorrow and I'll sort you out."
It was a casual transaction, made by a chemist and a customer, many times prior for enough poison to kill a litter of puppies, or two persons intent on saying goodbye. On Tuesday the 18th of October at 11 a.m, Herbert entered Mr. Todd's chemist shop at 17 Bradford Road. As he was legally obliged to, the chemist filled in the poisons book.
"October 1832, Mr. H. Turner, HCW formula, destroy pups."
It was signed H. Turner in a scrawl which would later match the register at the Regent's Palace Hotel and the suicide note he would send to his mother. And having paid 2 shillings, one for each life, he was handed a small green bottle with a double dose of cyanide. That night, back on Alexandra Road, away from the prying eyes, Herbert met Mabel in secret.
"I told her I got it. And she said, all right.
All right.
We didn't take it then, because she suggested we should come to London and do it. I agreed. I gave her the bottle, and she kept it for safety in her handbag."
As agreed, Herbert told his mum and dad that he was going away with a friend to Blackpool, a local seaside town frequented by millions every year. And although it would be too bitterly cold for a swim, as his trip would coincide with the famous illuminations, his parents weren't worried about their boy. In fact, having asked their permission to go, his father gave him a few shillings to make sure he had fun.
"On Saturday, the 22nd of October, we went to Blackpool together and stayed at the Granville,"
Herbert would state.
"We stayed there as Mr. and Mrs. Turner, and we occupied the same bed."
Many hotels would refuse an unmarried couple a bed, so the ruse was a sensible precaution to stay low. With only a week of life before their demise, they made their final days as special as possible, with walks on the beach, eating candy floss, and riding roller coasters by day, as by night, they lay cradled in each other's arms, as Mabel's matronly chest enveloped Herbert's head with a smothering love. It should have been the perfect start to a tragic end. And although Mabel had told her mother that she was going to Blackpool with a girl pal, she also felt obliged to send a letter to her soon-to-be ex-husband. On the day they arrived, Mr. Hill received a handwritten note telling him where she had gone and that she was planning to return by next Tuesday. Only her sign-off caused him great concern given the recent decline in her mental state. As it read,
"Please forgive me if you can. Goodbye. Love, Mabel."
On Sunday the 23rd of October, having scoured the streets of Blackpool in search of the woman who was still legally his wife, on the seaside esplanade underneath the illuminations, Mr. Hill spotted the sturdy shape of Mabel walking hand in hand with a small young man who he later found out was Herbert Turner. Amidst the roar of trams and the screech of seagulls, Mr. Hill harangued Mabel in public as there was no way he was going to grant her a divorce. Not now, not ever. It was a bitter fight, in which Mabel gave as good as she got. But as was his way, Herbert stayed silent, not wanting to be a bother. And needing to have this out with her husband once and for all, Mabel sent Herbert back to the boarding house. Only this was just a ruse, as making the excuse that she needed to use the loo, Mabel slipped out of the cafe's back door, and unable to find her again, Mr. Hill returned to Bradford as the two lovers went to London. On Monday, the 24th of October, Mabel and Herbert arrived in London. It was the perfect place to hide out, as being a gargantuan metropolis, which fizzed with a dizzy blur of passing people, too busy to stop and talk. Even if her husband went looking for them here, he could stand right next to them and never see them. To keep their profile low, for several nights, they stayed at an unnamed hotel at 28 Bloomsbury Street, signing in as Mr. and Mrs. Sinclair. There they saw the sights. Buckingham Palace, Big Ben, the British Museum, and savoured many pleasant meals at the Lion's Corner House tea rooms, always splitting the bill. On Saturday the 29th of October, feeling a greater sense of security and freedom, they moved to the slightly less affordable, but certainly more resplendent, Regent Palace Hotel, just off Piccadilly Circus. The beds were cosy, the rooms were clean, the fires were soothing, and with a phone and a bathroom on every floor, a maid was on hand to connect your call or to run you a bath. At 9:40 p.m, Irene Hewitt, the reception clerk of the Regent Palace Hotel, welcomed two new guests. A larger lady in her early 30s, and a shorter man just out of his teens. Giving their names as Mr. and Mrs. Herbert Turner of Shipley, he signed in. They said they planned to stay at least one night, maybe even two. And as the only luggage they had was a small battered suitcase and a handbag, which she clutched to her chest as tightly as any stranger in the Big Smoke, they were handed the keys to room 201. Having entered the lift, as the lovers ascended to the second floor, they held hands and smiled as he whistled a cheerful little ditty. Sunday the 30th of October 1932 was their last day alive. So as money no longer had any meaning, they splashed out. They ate the best food that their finances could afford. They went to see a West End show, maybe The Cat and the Fiddle at the Palace, or Tell Her the Truth at the Savile. And by all accounts, they looked happy and devoted, holding hands and kissing as they shared the last treats from a box of Swiss chocolates. At 6:15 p.m, a large parcel and two letters written on Regent Palace Hotel notepaper were received at a local posting sorting office, addressed to their mothers. Mabel's letter read,
"My darling mother, I hope you'll forgive me for what I'm about to do. I can't think of another way out for a bad girl. I've caused you enough trouble in this world, and I hope the good Lord will forgive me. I'm broken-hearted at what I've done, and the world is well rid of me. Goodbye, mother.
and try not to worry about me. Give my love to Clarice, Alan, Ralph and Grandma, and yourself, and my dear husband, who was too good for me. Your broken-hearted daughter, Mabel.
Her handwriting was neat, her spelling was good, and there were no corrections or mistakes. Herbert's letter read,
Dear Mother, can you ever forgive me for the trouble I've caused you? For by the time you receive this, I shall not be on this earth. Please don't blame anyone for what I'm doing, as it is all my own fault. I'm sending you my things on by parcel post, and please give them to Roland, as that is my last wish that he should have them. And please tell him to cheer up. Also, please ask Father to forgive me, as I've been a rotter to him. No doubt, you'll know who I'm with. But please do not blame her, as we cannot live without each other. Your loving son, Herbert. Kiss, kiss, kiss.
His letter was hesitant, messy, and having struggled to write his suicide note. This wasn't a first draft. It was a third. At 9 p.m, they returned to the hotel. But only one of them had no plans to leave. 20 minutes later, as if to cleanse himself of his sins, Herbert asked the chambermaid to run him a bath. She did so. He said thank you.
Thank you.
He washed his woolen vest, his socks and his pants. And having returned to room 201, he placed his wet undergarments on an armchair beside a roaring fire. Dressed in his blue patterned pajamas, being sat on the bed, he saw that Mabel was dressed in her best clothes. A black dress with yellow trimming and light-coloured stockings. With her hair neat, her makeup on, and a set of pearls which hid a faded scar from an earlier time when life got too much. Only she wasn't dressed for a night on the town, but to check out of life once and for good.
While I was in the bathroom, she had placed the poison on a table near the bed. There was already some poured into two glasses. There was more in her glass than in mine. I picked up the bottle. It was empty. I then went to the bed, and we both lay down.
The moment had come. A farewell to their sadness, and a hello to their happiness in the life ever after.
We got ourselves comfortable and bid each other goodbye,
sharing a last kiss in this life and sealing their love in the next.
She took hers first.
Raising a glass tumbler to her lips, Mabel swigged back the colourless liquid with a faint blue hue and flinched at its taste of bitter almonds.
She handed me her empty glass, which I put on the table.
Cursed with a weak heart, she died within the minute. And with his lover truly gone,
I took my poison and drank it.
On Monday the 31st of October at 8:45 a.m, having received a parcel and a deeply troubling letter, Herbert's father called the hotel, demanding to speak to his son. Upon their door, a chambermaid knocked three times, but got no reply. So she entered the cold, dark room, softly cooing,
"Sir, a trunk called for you."
Only neither stirred. As the two motionless figures lay on the bed, holding hands in silence. As the chambermaid reached over, she touched Mabel's face and saw that she was icy cold. But seeing a flicker in his eyes, she realized that Herbert was still alive. At her autopsy, detecting a purplish hue to her lips, neck and upper arms, rigor mortis determined that death had occurred 12 hours prior. And with no signs of a struggle, no smell of cyanide on her breath as it evaporates quickly, and an empty green bottle beside her, suicide was suspected. At Charing Cross Hospital, as a precaution, Herbert had his stomach pumped and was injected with adrenaline. As a medic stated,
he was apparently unconscious.
With his colour good, his breathing fine, and his heart soft but regular, the woozy lad complained of a burning at the back of his throat.
At the back of my throat.
But when the doctor looked, there was no burning, nor signs that he had taken cyanide. But was this a mistake, fate, or deliberate? On the 13th of December 1932, at the Old Bailey, Herbert Turner was tried on the charge of feloniously and willfully murdering Mabel Hill by administering poison, at which his terrified lips quivered, not guilty.
Not guilty.
But as a death sentence loomed, so terrified was this frail boy that he collapsed in the dock. Seeing through to the very heart of the evidence, John Maud, his solicitor, pleaded to the jury.
It is clear that this woman had worked on the boy's mind by her suggestion of suicide until he became obsessed with the idea that there was nothing worthwhile in life but death.
As a happy little lad who was easily led, but never once had a dark thought or spoke of suicide, Herbert had always put others and their needs before himself. And even when stressed, he would never speak up or answer back, as his way of coping with life's worries was to whistle a cheerful little ditty. As a voice, when his silence said little, she decided to buy the poison. She decided to come to London. She poured it out. And although dressed for death, wearing his pajamas, he was clearly dressed for bed. Her letter to her mother was neat and direct, but his took three attempts, the last of which was a muddle, as if he wasn't fully committed to the terrifying prospect of death, but he didn't want to disappoint her. And besides, if he was really suicidal, why did he wash his pants, socks and vest, and then hang them out to dry? Found guilty, Herbert Turner was sentenced to death for Mabel's murder. But with the jury making a strong recommendation for clemency, Mr. Justice Charles commuted his sentence to life in prison.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
That's it, folks. Oh, Christ. That started well, then my recording just kept tripping over words. I guess I'm tired. Very tired. Time for the regular Murder Mile yawn. I almost said lawn, then I haven't got a lawn. How are all you Murky Milers? You all good? The Murky Milers, the people who stay to the bitter end, not the people who switched off already. Sod them. This is Extra Mile for people who don't know. This is the extra bit. What happens? I have a bit of a waffle. We do some quiz questions. If you like a little quiz, that's going to happen in a bit. Then there's some extra stuff to do with this case, which probably didn't make it into the episode. I am yet to edit this episode, so some things might get edited out of this episode. Let's go and pop on a tea, because I'm still on a diet. Actually, no, I'll treat myself to a nice tea. So moving away from the microphone a little bit... You can probably hear an annoying motorbike in the background. Someone seems to have bought a new motorbike with a loud, noisy engine. And they're roaring up and down the roads like a sad little bastard going, look at me, everyone. Look at me. Loud bike. Loud bike, small penis. Bastard. Get a job. There we go. Just making a tea, obviously powdered milk as always, coming back. So, cool, it's really cold today, isn't it? He says, I don't know where you are, you could be in the middle of a heat wave. Over here it's cold, it hit the minuses last night. So what's going on at the moment? Busy week. Obviously, I got a bit of an eye infection last week. One of my eyes just went really, really red and horrible and bloodshot. It was really horrible. So I spoke to him. Luckily, I've got a really good eye specialist. And he was like, I gave him all the symptoms. And he was like, right, you need to take your lenses out. You need to put this stuff in. And I was like, oh, no, I can't survive without my lenses because I've got really, 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 really bad eyesight. Not when people go, oh, I can't see anything without my glasses. And you ask them what their prescription is and they say -1. And you go, well, piss off. -12. Try living with -12. I can't even see the end of my nose. And I have my lenses tailored towards reading screens, so I can't see distance, so I can't drive anymore. But that's fine. Who needs to drive? Anyway, without my lenses in, I can't see anything, so I've been really stuck. So I did a couple of days of rest in my eyes. But yesterday was really good. I can't say much about it, but I was called in to work as a consultant on a very, very high-profile podcast. Very exciting. I was a big fan of their first series. They're doing a second series. Weirdly, I already knew the producer. She'd already been on my walk a couple of times, and she'd interviewed me years ago about something. So they called me in, and it was really good. We had a really good day. I walked them around all the sites and all the different locations that they need to know about, and then we sat down and we did some interviewing, which went really well. I don't think I gave particularly good answers, so I re-recorded them in my home studio last night, and I've sent them off to them. So that's going to be good. Their podcast, theirs takes months to do.
So theirs is coming out in October. So I will tell you more about it then, which is very exciting. Oh, I haven't put this on my list, but this is exciting. So I'm going to put a link in the show notes. Myself, put a link in the show notes. So myself, Paul from the True Crime Enthusiast, and Adam from UK True Crime, the three of us, the dream team, we're all coming together and we're doing a live show. The first one is going to be end of June up in Glasgow. Oh, shit, it's snowing. That's why it's so freaking cold. End of June, we're going to do a show. Click on the link in the show notes. You get all the data in there, everything that's in there. Really good venue. This is going to be the first one. If it goes well, we're already... I think tonight we're having a catch-up. We're going to do a catch-up about other venues. We're going to do a London one. We're going to do one near Paul, so that might be Liverpool-ish. So it'll be three across the country. If they go really well, the idea is to do more, so we'll do more across the UK. And if that goes really well, the idea is to do some overseas. We don't know anything about those yet, so don't ask us for dates. Don't go, oh, when are you coming to Atlanta? I don't know, I've just... pick that off the top of my head. We don't know. We literally all we know is Glasgow at the moment. So but if that goes well, we haven't thought about filming it yet and screening it. This is all too technical. This is just early days. But if you want to come and see us live, that would be great. We're doing a show called How to Plan the Perfect Murder and then Totally Balls It Up. So that's going to be good. Looking forward to that. Thank you to new Patreon subscribers. Thank you so much. New Patreon subscribers are Rita Virgos. I hope that's pronounced correctly. It could be Virgos. I should have asked. Or I should have double-checked. I've had such a horrible week, and because I haven't had access to... I haven't been able to use screens, so I haven't been able to email anyone. It's been a real nightmare. So thank you, new patrons. So Rita Virgos, Honor Osborne. How can I not pronounce these names? Sharon Brereton. And Diana Matos. So thank you so much for that. Thank you for becoming Patreon subscribers. Hopefully you enjoyed last week's all the crime scene photos for that one. I think they were quite interesting about the lap dancing club. You can see them all there. All this snow. There's loads of snow chucking down. And a thank you to Sally Norris as well for your very kind donation. That's very much appreciated. I would spend it on cake, but I'm 2 weeks into my diet now. It's still going well. I'm dropping weight, which is good. I'm not as fat and bulky. No cake, no chocolate, no wheat, except last night because I got in late. So I bought a little pizza, a little stone-baked pizza, so it's not too bad. But it's weird being on the diet because I don't really eat many processed... I don't eat processed foods anyway, but no fats. And I had a bit of peanut butter last week, which I put on a rice cracker, and it burnt the top of my mouth. So it's amazing all the fats that you eat on a regular basis and you think, meh, that's nothing. Do you know, you just absorb it. But you eat it and, you know, nothing happens. But it's like I know that if I get some chocolate now, if I eat some chocolate, the fats in the chocolate will burn my mouth. I had the same about 2 years ago where I went off ice cream for a bit and then I tried like a Ben and Jerry's and I was like, oh, God, it's like all the fats just went, burnt my mouth. So I had to go and get a... some of the Swedish glass, which is very nice, very nice. Vegan ice cream. Vegan ice creams are really good. Not the cheapy ones. The cheapy ones are dog shit. But the some of the higher quality vegan ones are really good. And you don't get that burning sensation in your mouth that you do with animal fats. Let me just go on. Pour me tea. So, obviously, no cake of the week. Because I'm not eating cakes. So yeah, no cake of the week. Although to make sure I have a little bit of bad in there, I've bought some relatively healthy flapjacks because obviously flapjacks have goodness in them. They have a kind of like syrup in them as well. But you know what? That's not too bad given the fact that I'm barely eating anything chocolate. I'm not eating chocolate. I'm not eating biscuits. My only real treat at the moment seems to be rice crackers. But I've got to do that to keep my weight down. Because I was a big old blubbery bastard. Ugh, look at that. That powdered milk has settled. Right. Coming back. Let's open the windows and have a look at the snow. As people would say up north. Not snow, but snow. Oh, look at all the snow. Right. Okay, let's do quiz questions. Don't forget, I might ball some of these up. I might edit out the questions. I might edit out the answers in the show, so we don't know. Right, question number one. What is the name of the road that Herbert and Mabel lived on? Question number two. What did Alice's mum convert the ground floor of their house into? God, I got hiccups now. Question number three. What year did the Regent Palace Hotel open? Question four. By what nickname did Canadian soldiers refer the? By what nickname did Canadian soldiers refer to the hotel as? When it was little more than a brothel. That was just a badly written sentence. So when it was little more than a brothel, when Canadian soldiers turned up, what nickname would they give the hotel? Question five. What did Herbert do as a job?
Herbert.
Question six. What was the name of his employer? Question seven. What was the name of the boarding house they stayed in Blackpool? Question 8. What shop currently occupies the ground floor of what was the Regent Palace Hotel? Question 9. They signed into two other hotels as Mr. and Mrs. Turner, but what other name did they use? And question 10. Eva is a goddess, yes or no? That's the most important question. So, let's dive into some extra stuff that probably wasn't in the episode. So, when the chambermaid came in, I think her name was Olive, she thought they were just sleeping or just heavily sleeping. She approached the sleeping woman, she touched her cheek, and she said instantly she felt it was icy cold. She said, "It gave me an awful shock, for it was obvious that the woman had been dead for many hours. I noticed a flicker in the eyelids of the man, but he was unable to speak." Mabel was fully dressed on the bed and he was wearing his pyjamas. In the chest of drawers, which was the top right-hand drawer, was a bottle laid prussic acid, which is another name for hydrogen cyanide. It had been sold by Todd of Bradford Road in Idle. And an attempt had been made to obscure the address by rubbing it with a pencil, although the address could still be read. We don't know who did that. There was an empty glass on the shelf, so this would have been the one that Mabel had drank and given to Herbert, and he put it on the shelf, and some broken glass on the floor, as one of the empty tumblers was on the ground and had smashed. So that's more likely to have been Herbert's one. What else is there? A man's coat on the back of the door, so that was Herbert's coat that was hanging on the back of the door. There were two notes found in that pocket. These were the drafts of his suicide note, both of which started with "Dear Mother, Dear Mother." One asking for forgiveness, and both suggested the contemplation of committing immediate suicide. The letter and the parcels arrived separately. So even though this was a Sunday, this was back in the days when in the UK when you could actually still send post on a Sunday and it would arrive on Monday. Also, this is an era, we don't have it anymore, but we used to have an era where you'd have two parcel deliveries a day. So you get your posts and then you get your parcels. So that's why they received the letter first. And then at 11:45 a.m., which I haven't put in the episode, that's when they received the parcel afterwards. So they received the concerning letter and then Herbert's father tried to make the call to the hotel to get through. And then he received the parcel, which contained a lot. I think I've got a list of what was inside in there. The chambermaid immediately called for assistance and a doctor and the police arrived. Hotel authorities called Dr. Leopold Mandel of 81 Harley Street at 8:40 a.m. He arrived at 8:55 and he was the house physician for Strand Palace Hotels, Jay Lyons and co owned Strand Palace, so they own a series of hotels in the area, one of which is this one, another of which is was the Cumberland Hotel, which is Maison Lyonnaise, the Blackout Ripper one, and another one is the Strand Palace Hotel, which we're going to come to in a later episode. You're welcome. They said Mabel had been dead for several hours. Her skin showed discoloration. Her skin was unusually livid and there was froth coming from her mouth and nose. There were no signs of a disturbance or struggle, but the man was still alive. Her rigor mortis had set in and there was a lack of colour, a lack of odour of hydrogen cyanide to her breath, which happens after a couple of hours, even though it's got a very strong, bitter almond smell. After a couple of hours, it disappears. And cyanide is almost entirely disappears from your system afterwards. When they took Herbert to hospital, his colour was relatively good. His breathing was regular. His heart was soft but regular. Doctors gave him an injection of adrenaline, and they said he returned to consciousness. When they were there, they said everyone stated he was apparently unconscious / dead. And it's just that apparently that's slightly worrying with there. When they looked in the room, both tumblers were totally empty. We only know how much he says they drank by how much Herbert said she drank and he drank. But how much did he drink? Did he drink any? Or did he tip it on the floor? We don't know. He may have drank a little bit and therefore which made him woozy. He was wearing his blue pajamas with a blue striped top. It was basically a pajama suit. Mabel, as mentioned in the episode, she was fully dressed except for her shoes, which were underneath the bed. She was lying on her back with one of her hands crossed over her abdomen and they were holding hands. The bottle was labeled poison 1 ounce, which is effectively 8 lethal doses. In the room, his gents' shoes, his socks with the suspenders, because that was the era, a lounge coat and a vest, which was drying, a soft collar and tie, and a gentleman's raincoat. What else we got? Let's see down here. Hospital. He was taken to Charing Cross Hospital, which is just at the back of the Strand. Mabel's body was kept in situ and was photographed by the police. In the files, there were no autopsy or crime scene photos. Sometimes they're not there. Dr. Mandel called the ambulance at about 9 a.m. and they arrived at 9:10. Body was determined as extinct and was removed to the hospital after it had been photographed. As mentioned, Herbert's stomach was washed out, i.e. pumped. They said he appeared to regain consciousness after that. He complained of a burning at the back of his throat, but there were no signs of burning. The doctor, Frederick Janisch, said there were no signs that Turner had taken the prussic acid, the hydrogen cyanide. The doctor received contents of the stomach washing and found no traces of prussic acids, oxalic acid or carbolic acid. He tested for all three just in case. Herbert thought that he'd taken prussic acid, but he'd actually taken a different acid by mistake. But these proved to be negative. Someone on a tiny little motorbike is going up the canal. Whee! Sounds horrible. Inquest was held at Westminster Coroner's Court by Ingleby Oddy, who we've heard about many times before, on Friday the 4th of November 1932. That's when it opened. And it concluded on the 23rd of December 1932. That was when it was closed after the guilty charge at the Old Bailey. The autopsy of Mabel was conducted by Dr. J.F. Taylor of St. George's Hospital. Said that she died of the effects of hydrogen cyanide poisoning. The absorption of poison is so fast that you don't even need to swallow it. Don't forget, she'd taken more than double of the lethal dosage, so you basically put it on your tongue and it just absorbs. But Mabel did die fast because she had a very weak heart. Slightly larger lady, but also being of quite a nervous disposition, her heart was not in a particularly good way anyway. She was prone to passing out. What else we got? Obviously, there were Herbert's blood work and the contents of his stomach was sent to Dr. Jocelyn Patterson of Charing Cross Hospital. He was their head of biology, and he said, there's a man called Jocelyn, said there were no traces of prussic acid in Herbert's system or any other poison. Which is why I say, did he take the poison? Did it just dissipate by that point, or did he take no poison at all? Everything seemed to match. The hotel receptionist identified them. Herbert's handwriting matched the letters and the signing in on the address book. So everything is always right. All the fingerprints in the room are correct. So there's nothing suspicious about this. This is not a suspicious death of someone's trying to fake a death. This really is what it is, a kind of a meant to be a suicide pact. But was she the one that was driving it? Did he agree to it? Because he's kind of, as they say, a little bit easily led. Did he back out at the last minute? Mabel's death was caused by cyanide poisoning, shock, and cardiac failure, i.e. chronic disease of the heart. Cyanide was detected in her liver, kidney, stomach, and stomach contents, unlike Herbert. And they were able to calculate what was left at that point was about 0.6 grains. 1 grain is 65 milligrams, and 3 milligrams is enough to kill. So she got a lot in her system, which is why she died. At the autopsy, they confirmed that she had a light scar about 2.5 inches long under the left-hand side of her neck, just below her ear. There was obviously no swelling to that because this was an old injury, but this was where she tried to cut her throat previously. Her heart was already enlarged, she had thickened valves, her muscles were thin, and her heart was fatty with lungs congested. Her liver was enlarged, and her spleen was fatty and enlarged as well, even though she was quite, as they say, strongly built. Committal was held at Marlborough Street Police Court, and he was originally charged of murder by administering poison. What else is an investigation? What else haven't I told you about this case? When he was in Charing Cross Hospital, they had a policeman keeping an observation on him all the time because he was there for a little while. When Detective Sergeant Patterson turned up, he said that Herbert seemed very conscious and appeared quite sensible. Herbert stated, "I expected you would come along. We agreed to die together. I expected you to come. We said we should do it about a fortnight ago, as we knew there would be nothing between us and she's married. I got to know her after her husband left. I didn't know him by sight." Mabel's mother wasn't informed by the police at that point because they were kind of doing their pieces together. Someone from the Yorkshire Post doorstepped Mabel's mother, knocked on the door and said, "Did you know that your daughter is dead? What have you got to say about this?" As journalists do. So the police hadn't actually had a moment to call and let her know your daughter is dead. Personal items were returned, even though Mabel had written a little letter saying, "I want everything left to my mum." Because of the way the law was, everything was returned to her husband, because basically everything that was hers was her husband's possessions. So Mabel left behind 2 rings, a necklace, the handbag and the contents, as well as her personal clothing. And Herbert also had a green fountain pen. What else have we got? 2nd of November, so this is after he's released from hospital. He's taken to Vine Street Police Station at 10 Vine Street, which is at the back of Piccadilly Circus. On the morning at 10:30 a.m., Divisional Detective Inspector Geoffrey Nurse and Detective Sergeant Barrett took Herbert's statement, which I can read in a bit. Detective Divisional Inspector Nurse said that when he arrived, he appeared to be very cold. He was shivering. In the crime scene, they found a wet woolen vest, and they asked him if he was in the habit of wearing a vest. He said, "Yes, but I washed it and left it in my bedroom." It was on the kind of an armchair near the fire. A DI nurse thought it odd that a man contemplating suicide would have a bath and wash his vest, which makes sense. They did look into the idea that maybe he had attempted to drown himself in the bath, but it just seemed entirely unlikely. So Herbert's statement that he did at Vine Street Police Station on the 2nd of November 1932. I won't do the voice. "I have known a girl named Mabel Hill, sometimes known as Mabel Bentley, for 7 months. We live near each other and have been sweethearting. On Saturday the 22nd of October 1932, we went to Blackpool together and stayed at the boarding house. We stayed there as Mr. and Mrs. Turner and occupied the same bed. We left there on Monday the 24th of October 1932 and came to London, where we stayed at a hotel at 28 Bloomsbury Street as Mr. and Mrs. We occupied the same bed. See, I'm getting good at this, he says. I'm about to balls one up, aren't I? On Saturday the 29th of October, we left there and we stayed at the Regent Palace Hotel as Mr. and Mrs. Turner. We occupied the same bed in room 201. I know that Mabel Hill was married and she was, and we were very fond of each other, and this caused us to be very happy. Unhappy, sorry, not happy. About a fortnight ago at Shipley, we thought things over. It's interesting reading his statement, because you'll see a lot of, she said this, she said that, we thought this. It's always what she says first, and then we thought this. There's very little I. About a fortnight ago, we thought things over, and we were so unhappy that we decided to commit suicide together. Mabel Hill really suggested that we should do it, and I agreed and became determined that we would. She suggested we should take the poison, so I went to a shop of a Mr. Todd, a chemist in Idle, and brought some prussic acid and signed the book in the name of Herbert Turner. I brought prussic acid because I work at a garage in Idle, and Mr. Todd came into the garage one day and I told him I wanted to poison two dogs. He told me to come to his shop and he would give me some prussic acid. I went to the shop to get it. Originally, the chemist shop owner said, if you want to poison some dogs, just bring them in and I'll poison them for you. And Herbert said, no, the owner of the dogs wants to see the dogs poisoned, so I need to do it elsewhere. It's all very weird. I told Mabel I had got it and she said, all right. We did not take it then because she suggested we come to London to do it. I carried the poison about me for a day or two and then I gave it to her. I don't know where she kept it, but I know that when we left Bradford on the 22nd of October, she had it in her handbag. And since that date, I only saw it once or twice in the handbag. We visited several theatres in London, spending a month, spending her money and mine. I paid the expenses, which we shared. On Sunday morning, I wrote a letter to my mother saying that I was going to commit suicide and asking for her forgiveness. Mabel Hill wrote a letter to her mother. I don't know what was in it. She did not tell me. I started to write two other letters to my mother, but I didn't finish them. I don't remember what happened to them. I think I put them in my pocket. On Saturday night, I had a bath, and upon my return to the bedroom, we began to discuss suicide again. We were running short on money. While I was in the bathroom, she placed the poison on the table near the bed, and there was some poison already poured out into two glasses on the table. There was more in her glass than in mine. I picked up the bottle, it was empty, and I put it in the drawer. I then went to the bed and we both lay on it. I was nearest the wall, we got ourselves in a comfortable position and bid each other goodbye. She took hers first and handed the empty glass, which I put on the table. Then I reached over and took my poison from the table and drank it. I do not remember what I did with the empty glass. I don't remember any more until I was on the way to the hospital. I had previously sent home some dirty clothes and had some washed myself. I have never thought of suicide before she suggested it. What else have we got in here? The trial. October, it was literally a short trial. 13th of December 1932, he pleaded not guilty and no evidence was presented by the defence, as was his right. As mentioned, Mr. Maud said, Turner loved Mrs. Hill passionately. Was it not clear that this woman of 32 years worked on the boy's mind by her suggestion of suicide until he became obsessed with the idea that there was nothing worthwhile in life and the best thing was that they should both die? Judge Charles said Herbert was somewhat frail in mind and the woman, 10 years his senior, was a woman of determination and strong character. But whether he was weak or strong, whether he was overborne by a woman into a suicide agreement did not matter. The real question was whether the woman died from prussic acid poisoning or whether her death was accelerated by it. If they found that although intending to die by poison, she actually died by heart disease, it would be open to the jury to find that there was an attempt to murder. So that's what the case was really all about, was taking the poison. Was it the poison that killed her or was it her weak heart? He was found guilty. He was sentenced to death. This was an era of death sentence, but the jury strongly recommended mercy. The jury stated, "We are agreed that prussic acid, self-administered, was not wholly but a contributing cause to the woman's death, and we find him guilty with a strong recommendation of murder." Justice Charles forwarded the recommendation on the back of his own recommendation for mercy to the Home Secretary, Sir John Gilmore, who advised the King, and it was agreed. Mabel's body was returned back to Shipley. The funeral took place in Knabwood Cemetery in Shipley on Saturday, the 12th of November 1932. It was held in secret, so much so that even the neighbours were kept in the dark about the arrangements until the funeral cortege drove by. Sorry, there's a man walking past singing to himself and he's got an awful voice. The only mourners there were her mother, Herbert Hill, her two brothers, two other relatives. Herbert Hill obviously is her husband, and the obviously as the hearse went down the street, it went past Herbert Turner's house. And I think that's it. I've had a look around this. Unfortunately, there's a lot of Herbert Turners around there, so I don't really know what happened to him afterwards. Did look, but no details. And that's that. So let's do the answers to the questions. Because it's cold. Oh, my feet. My tootsies are cold. Really cold tootsies. So just scrolling up. Fortunately, there's a lot of notes. Right. Let's do the answers to the questions. Let's see how many you got right. Question one. What was the name of the road that they lived on? I probably just fucked that up. It was Alexandra Road. Question two. What did Alice's mum convert the ground floor of their house into? It was a sweet shop.
Ooh, sweeties.
Question three. What year did the Regent Palace Hotel open? 1915, which is a great time for a pub to open because it's the start of World War One. So it must have been a struggle. Question four. What was the nickname that the Canadian soldiers referred to the hotel as when it was little more than a brothel? They called it the Riding School. Lovely. Question five. What did Herbert do as a job? He was a motor mechanic. Question six. What was the name of his employer? It was Walter Heggs. Question seven. What was the name of the boarding house they stayed at in Blackpool? It was the Granville. Granville. Question seven. What was the name... I've just done that one. Question eight. What shop currently occupies the ground floor on what was previously the Regent Palace Hotel? It is UGG. Question nine. They signed in to two other hotels as Mr. and Mrs. Turner, but what name did they use in the other? It was Mr. and Mrs. Sinclair. And question 10, the most important question of all. Eva is a goddess. Yes or no? I mean, the answer is obviously yes, isn't it? The answer is yes. If you said no, if you scored any questions right, you lose all of your points. They are gone forever. How dare you? If you said yes, you get a gazillion points. Gazillion, bazillion, million points, of course. Because that is just the facts of life. So that's that done. Hope you enjoyed that. That was that episode. We're back next week for another one-parter. Have yourself a good week. Stay safe and be good. Lots of love. Bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.